Welcome to The Way Podcast with your host, Bill Trofesky, found at podcasttheway.com. Today, I am sitting with Thomas Durr, and I'll let you introduce yourself and tell the audience about what we're talking about today.
Awesome. What's going on, everybody? Thank you for having me today, Bill. And I just want to talk a little bit about just the perceptions of gaming culture and kind of like the history of it. Since it's such a new topic, you know, gaming is such a huge thing, even in the field of, you know, the economy. It's booming right now with esports all over the place. But how did it really get to this point, and how do we talk about games, and how did it build the identity that it has today? And that's kind of what my goal is going to be with this episode.
Got it. Speaking of how we got to the point we're at today, how did gaming start? How did it start in the beginning?
Well, gaming started with a bunch of different things, and you know, people don't really like to remember, but back in the day in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, you had something like slot machines, and slot machines were considered games, and they were outlawed. And eventually that shifted its way into pinball, and pinball was also banned, surprisingly, across the country because of its reputation with the mafia. And, you know, using coins, they figured that you were putting coins into the illegal slot machines, and the fun pinball machines were functioning the same way. So there was this very negative perception around it. And New York City actually didn't unban pinball until 1976.
Wow, so I forgot about hearing that. Yeah. They just didn't want the mafia getting money.
Well, Mayor LaGuardia at the time, he had this gripe with the mafia. Since coming from an Italian heritage, he felt very embarrassed by them. So he wanted to make sure that the Italian mafia was kind of as suppressed as possible. And one thing that he made sure to do was to go after their financial assets, which was typically gambling. And he turned it into like this really big war effort kind of thing, where he would go around and they confiscated about 3,000 pinball and slot machines throughout New York City and broke them down for metal and contributed them to the war effort, I think, during World War II. So, yeah, it was, you know, they did some crazy stuff.
To say the least, Drunk History, that's where I remember hearing it. It was a good episode. Yep. I love that show.
It's a good show.
So I understand you wrote a thesis on this topic. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, definitely. So my thesis revolves mostly about how gender and technology, specifically in the field of gaming, has shaped and evolved over time, and how our perceptions of it have constantly been molded by our typical standard gender stereotypes that we have with like masculinity and femininity. And I just go into like a brief early history talking about just how in the 70s specifically, gaming, all technology and development specifically was handled by men. It was a field that they saw that women couldn't do, or women were incapable of working with these large computers and doing the calculations. Although, believe it or not, they were actually most of the coders for the space program when NASA launched our first space mission. So it's very hypocritical, and it's very contradictory, the history of technology. And it's just shocking to see over time in the 70s and 80s, you'll see that the enrollment of females in computer engineering programs in colleges across the country decreased from about maybe 35 or 7-ish percent all the way down to about 13, 14, 15%.
It was 30-35% around World War II times, and then decreased to today, or
a little bit after, more towards like the 60s and 70s, and then by the 80s and 90s it decreases, and even to this point it's actually still quite as low.
Got it. I according to aauw.org, I found that women only make up 28% of the STEM field, and as a college student I see there's a strong push for that, but why is that?
So there's actually a really important explanation as to why that is. And with gender stereotyping, just by making things appear to be masculine or masculine dominated, it's going to automatically discourage women from participating, or at least trying to even get into that field, whether it be just having fun playing the games themselves or going to develop it. So one big thing that we see, there's a lot of programs, girls who code, and there's a lot of things that we do nowadays to try and get girls into computer technology and get them to the forefront, because a lot of them have great ideas. Like Roberta Williams, she was one of her and her husband, they founded Sierra Online, and they're pretty much the reason why RPGs like Skyrim exists because they were able to actually, with him doing the computing and her with the development, they together planned Mystery House, which was one of the first graphical RPG adventure. And it was revolutionary because prior to that, it was just text-based adventures that were on like the old model computers that they would just type yes and no responses. And that's how we have a majority of gaming now because of one woman's idea.
I get that a woman created the idea, but when I think of Call of Duty, Battlefield, RPGs, stuff like that, even Skyrim, it just seems like a male kind of game. Like, guys like to shoot more and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually funny. There's really not a lot of there are some statistics that go to show that, like, yes, men are playing these games slightly more, but it's mostly a perception of, like, just how we reflect these gender stereotypes that we've just had in society just literally forever onto how we expect people to behave. So a big thing in the 90s was this push for this idea that girls needed games too. There was this perception that, hey, there's a market that we need to make games for girls because there just aren't any. But the perception that they had, a lot of the marketing companies like Mattel with Barbie, was it had to be pink, fashion, this, that. And one of the big parts of my research that I find is that that's really not what girls wanted to play, nor was that actually what they were playing. It did have a lot of successful sales. But once games like Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego came out, Nancy Drew, games that required girls to think and communicate and explore and go on an adventure and, you know, put themselves into the story and learn, there was a bigger reception in that regard to girls playing games and kind of breaking the stigma that women can't think, you know, critically when it comes to video games or technology. So I think that's one big thing to say as well.
I found statistics that agree with what you said, where women like the thinking side of video games. However, I found Wikipedia says 96% of shooters are games are men playing the game. So doesn't that kind of contradict the other statement?
Well, so the reason why this, I have the same statistics as well, and the reason why that is because in the 90s when Doom, Wolfenstein 3D, Duke Nukem, when all these games come out, there's this very big push against violence in video games. And what happens is aggression, if I were to ask you if it was aggression was a male or female trait, you would probably say
male,
right? I mean, that's just the gender, that's the stereotype that we have come to socially construct around being a male. So violence, when it came to video games, was this big threat that was affecting boys at the time. And in 1993, there was actually a congressional hearing that was held, and they pretty much put on blast Mortal Kombat and Night Trap. I don't know if you've ever heard of Night Trap.
I haven't. Is it similar to it?
No. So Night Trap is a surveillance, like a live surveillance footage game of a sleepover of these of attractive girls. And it's actually used, it was developed by Sega, and they used real actors and actresses. And what you have to do is you basically are monitoring a girl's slumber party, and these, I don't want to say they were supposed to be vampires, but originally Hasbro had the rights to the game. And what they decided to do was, like, you can't have anything that is like reproducible violence in this game. So the guy had to take away the idea of vampires and turn it into augers with, like, they're basically like teethless vampires that move really slow and are old, and they couldn't bite anything. So they had these weapons that they would hook around people's necks that would inject a drill and drain blood from them. And you had to stop this invasion of these monsters in the house. I know it sounds weird, right?
Yeah, that sounds really complicated.
It is. So pretty much the reason why it got so much attention was because the women were super sexualized. There were these overtones of sexualizing these women, as well as, you know, these monsters and bad guys were like killing the women and whatnot. Only if you like lose. That was the argument Sega was proposing. But at the time, no one saw blood and the fatalities of Mortal Kombat before. This was all new to people because of how good graphics were becoming. And people were really scared that, oh, boys are going to become shooters and boys are going to be killing and treating women like this. And I've tried doing a lot of research on the results of that, and I've seen some of them say, yeah, like, you know, like there have been like slight like effects of like violent video games, like some your behavior immediately after playing being a little bit differently, but no evidence suggests that there is any long-term effects of violent games. And I think it would be unfair to blame game developers to be like, oh, you made this one game and millions and millions and millions of people play it, but only one person did something bad and attributed their bad act to your game.
It's been a while since I looked into the aggression in video games. I remember, like, they tried to pin it with the shootings that happened a lot, the school shootings in prior years.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. I remember video shooting games did desensitize. However, it did not motivate aggression and at any means. And I thought that argument died off. But then my roommate the other day told me that there was another shooting and they tried to pin on video games again. So that argument's still alive, even though it's been disproven, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I really can't blame them, right? Like, people are always constantly looking for some type of scapegoat to say, hey, you know, we don't need to actually change gun policy. We just need to, like, prevent people from playing certain video games. And I think, especially as an adult, you should have the right to, you know, indulge in whatever media you want. And that's actually what the congressional hearing kind of revealed at the end. The main guy, I totally forgot his name, but he basically said that I believe in, you know, the freedom of speech and freedom of choice. So, but personally, I don't agree with a lot of the games that you guys are producing and the content in them. So what we're going to do is we're just going to force you to create a rating system. And that's why video games are now rated, because of the 1993 ruling.
Hmm. That's why we have the E Everybody, T-Teens, Amateur. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Sega, apparently, they self-rated the game as M for Mature, 17+, and they were just kind of, like, getting, like, super ripped into for it. So, I don't know, it's typical political, you know, BS.
Yeah, political mumbo-jumbo. So, you mentioned capitalism when talking about your thesis. How does mm-hmm. that play into the video game market?
Yeah, of course. So one big thing that people don't realize is our system of economics does play a much larger role in a lot of other things than we tend to think. And that's, you know, our perceptions of race and gender and these things. Specifically because, for example, money and your job is related to your skill. And skill is also a very gendered area. For example, there is a book I read called Gender at Work, and what it pretty much highlights is this idea that, for example, a man can be a skilled tailor where he's actually able to profit off of his profession and his skill. Yet, during the time, there was a lot of women expected to know the skills of a tailor and not receive any compensation. They couldn't start any business with it, and they were just expected to do that task for their family, sewing clothes and repairing stuff and whatnot. So the idea of skill is also very gendered. And this is where the idea of skill and women lacking it find its way into technology, just from this very ancient idea of men being able to kind of dominate a position or a skilled labor force or area. And then now women are now excluded from that exact field just because men are predominantly in that area. And it comes off as, hey, this is a male thing that women are unable to participate in.
Is that a video game thing, or is that a historically? I remember back in the 1900s, we learned about that in high school.
Historically, yeah, absolutely. But most of my argument is that the culture of gaming that we have and the arguments that I'm making are a result of this greater societal like perspective on gender and how these things permeate into this new developing culture, because video game culture had to develop at some point, right, over time. And it's pretty much just an influence of how we saw other things, how we saw family values, right? Early games were marketed directly to families so that, you know, oh, it's educational for your kids and it's, you know, fun for the parents to play with them. So capitalism, the goal is to, right, always make a profit. And one way the video game industry decided to do that was targeting young boys at first, because most of the technology marketing that happened previously has been always towards men. For example, cars in America a lot of cars were always sold with like poster babes, or whenever you go to car shows, you just see a lot of attractive women trying to advertise the car, the make, the model, or different parts for that car. And it seems to be a very male dominated hobby nowadays. Would you say?
Yeah, I agree with that with cars.
Mm-hmm. So for example, we look at cars as a form of technology and and that was mostly in like the 50s and 60s, the example I was giving. So when some of the first arcade systems by Nolan Bushnell, the guy who pretty much made and started Atari, he participated in a game called Computer Quiz and Computer Space. And the advertising and marketing for those two consoles, which they were arcade cabinets, they were advertised alongside very attractive women. So it's funny to see early video game marketing, because your target audience wasn't the players. Rather, it was the arcade owners, the shop owners who were going to be putting these technologies in their establishments. So, and they were typically men that ran pizzerias, or they ran little arcades and ran these spaces. So you're advertising to men to say, hey, look at this new interesting game that we have. You should buy it, because there's this really attractive woman with the quiz game and she's wearing half of a graduation gown. And then the other one, Computer Space, was a blonde model in a see-through nightgown. So you get the kind of question, like, why are we associating the female body with video, like the future of what video games are going to be, this technology?
Yeah, but if it's a capitalism thing, wouldn't targeting towards women too? That's 50% of your market. So why not do something like that with the men on the covers instead to attract to them?
So originally, my argument would be that men were just the only ones thought to be capable enough to work with this technology, since they were the ones developing it, programming it, and using it and buying it. So that was your only market, because that was the perception at the time. And it wasn't until the 80s or 90s when companies were starting to think like, so wait, why aren't girls playing games? And it's this history of both patriarchy and marketing strategies and just older perceptions of how men kind of dominate every field, specifically the new frontier of technology. But going into that, that question specifically is, how do we market to girls? What do girls want? Like, these are the questions that these companies start to think of. And initially they start to think, okay, it has to be pink. It has to be fashionable. There has to be some type of romance and dating and socialization. And yeah, it worked for a little bit, but there's a lot of companies that start springing up as a way to advocate for young girls and saying, hey, these are not the games that they want to play. So let's bring them in. Let's do some focus groups. I have a ton of documentation from the Strong Museum in Rochester, New York, when I did my archival research. And I have countless, countless, countless focus group discussions on what girls wanted. And I've looked at maybe 100, 200 different ones, and not a single one said that they played Barbie games.
So who played Barbie games? They're just made and nobody the parents would buy them or something?
Probably buy them for, probably younger kids as well, but just from the evidence that I was looking at, girls were not interested, and they were mostly interested in, believe it or not, games like Solitaire, Heart, all the original games that you can play on the computer in the 90s. And they loved it. And they said that they loved to think and they loved the strategy behind it. So that's kind of what goes into the development of Nancy Drew, when her interactive took over, got the rights to produce games for that content after, it was a series since the 1930s and it was extremely successful. So having good representation in video games, that's not like this damsel in distress character. Mind you, even, are you familiar with Samus Aran from the Metroid series?
Yeah, I know of her.
So the original game, believe it or not, the pronouns in the game manual were he, him, his, despite her being a female character. So we're not too sure. My research suggests that it wasn't possibly intentional. It was maybe just a bad translation. But then the creator of Samus actually said that it was like some type of translation for, I don't want to say she-male, but it was just like some like ancient term we definitely don't use that translates really poorly from Japanese. But it just kind of shows like there's like these real oddities when it comes to women, because in the original Metroid, if you beat the game in under a certain time limit, despite it being 8-bit, she removes her armor and she's just exposed. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so it's like, why are we exposing, you know, the breast and the lower, you know, the bottom half of a woman in an 8-bit game if you beat the game in time? So it's just kind of like, it has you thinking, like, why is this being produced, right? Like, to sexualize women. And it starts very early. And I read a study where the sexualization of characters peaks pretty much in 1995, and it does drop from that point. But, you know, one of the biggest examples would be like Tomb Raider, super sexualized. And just the history of that character alone. Nowadays, they actually, the whole company changed the way she looks. Like they took away the crop top and the short shorts, and they gave her like an actual like set of gear to wear, to more focus not on her sexuality, but more so her strength and her cunning and her bravery and those kind of traits that people should be valuing in the characters, and not their humongo breasts and, you know, really unproportioned waist sizes. And you know, also in The Legend of Zelda, it's named after Zelda, but you're playing as Link and you're saving Zelda. So it's just kind of like, it's just this trope that exists of, you know, male character saves damsel in distress, and that's it. That's their reward. Your reward for beating a game is a beautiful woman.
Yeah, but isn't the majority of players that play those RPG games male? So when they want to kind of fit into that category of being the hero male?
So there is I would say a majority of the players are, but there is a lot of women that play adventures, fantasy style RPGs, open world games. About, I believe it ranges anywhere between 30% and 40%, depending on the specific genre. But that's still a significant amount of players. And mind you, even when like Doom came out and games like, there were women playing Doom. There was a lot of women playing Doom. Unfortunately, in my research, I've actually tried very hard. I really cannot find anything from the 90s, whether it be a news article or personal statements or discussion boards of women talking about playing this game. So I think it was probably just something like, maybe not, I don't want to say like looked down upon, but there were people playing this game, because my advisor for the paper, she was playing it with her friends. And so there's like evidences like that, but overtly in the group, you know, the bigger picture, there's not a lot of like, yeah, I'm a girl and I'm proud to say that I played, you know, Doom kind of thing. So it's a really complex issue when it gets to that point. And it's hard to find statistics from the time, because it's so, there wasn't much market research in video games in the 80s and 90s. It's towards the end of the 90s is when market research and that kind of stuff started to develop, and asking people what they want to play and who the players are and all that kind of stuff.
Got it. Now, so nowadays, what genre or what field of video game do girls like to play more?
So as of right now, it really depends. The biggest one that girls play would be, actually have a really nice chart for it. They call it match 3 genre.
Yeah, I have that one too. I don't know what that is.
I was trying to like look into it. I'm like, what the hell is match 3? But I don't even know what it is, but I'm gonna go with like the family, the farm sim, casual puzzles, atmospheric exploration games, I guess kind of like No Man's Sky, games like that, interactive dramas. I actually don't even know what that would be, but MMOs, high fantasy, all that kind of stuff are pretty, there's a pretty heavy amount of women, but especially for the family farm sims. I don't know what the family games are, but about 70%. I guess that's like Animal Crossing, Harvest Moon, if that's what, I think that's what it's called.
Yeah,
right?
That'd be my guess.
But yeah, games like that. And right, and you do see that tactical shooters are super, super low on the chart. Despite, it's funny, I feel like the numbers are so odd, because I have friends that are girls that play like Tarkov with me. And Tarkov's are, you want, I think, the most tactical of tactical shooters. And I suck at that game, you know? And one big thing about this chart as well is there's also a lot of variance with some of the statistics as well. So it's like some of the statistics are higher because there's a couple games in that genre that are really dominated by women that it's not really properly reflected because the other games aren't. So when it comes to research, we have to always account for error as well. So that's why some of these statistics are kind of misleading sometimes.
Why do you say, or nowadays, is it an issue? Because I see that 48% of women video games according to Wikipedia, and another mm-hmm. one had 46%. And that seems very close to 50-50.
Exactly. So this is where the tricky part comes in. And this is where I'm writing actually this final chapter now in my thesis. My argument is that the need for women's games was just kind of a false perception. And I'm trying to find a way to like properly explain it. And an analogy that I made up to kind of like relate this to other people was ghosts, right? Do you personally think ghosts exist?
Personally, no.
Okay, so if you don't believe that ghosts exist, then they don't exist, right?
Sure.
But if you believe ghosts exist, then they exist, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So my idea is that the same thinking kind of happened with the gaming market and the perceptions of the gaming market by saying, oh, we don't see any games for girls. But by asking that question, what were they looking for? Games that had like pink covers or girly girl, you know, aesthetics on the front? Probably. That's probably honestly what they were looking for and identifying as girl, the typical stereotype girl. And that's the problem. It was just a perception. Girls were playing games, but there wasn't games directed towards the stereotype of girls. Does that make sense?
I guess so. There weren't any with like pink covers or anything like that.
Yeah, like for example, like when you think of a Barbie game, like you think like just this big pink blonde beautiful model looking woman, like with like a purse and a car and a huge house on the cover, right? Something like that.
Yeah,
because there weren't games like that in the 70s and 80s. People thought like, wait, there's no games for girls because there were no Barbie games. There were no, you know, there were no games to represent that gendered idea of what girls like. You get me?
Yeah, I get that.
So then looking at the market, they're like, oh, wait, maybe we should make Barbie games so that girls can play them. They made Barbie games and yeah, they were popular for a time and girls did play them, but girls played a lot of other games too. So that's kind of the argument that I'm kind of getting at now. And that's where I'm ending my thesis at. So girls did play games. And as you see, the statistics show, like they're literally just about half of the gaming population. But what we need to do is we need to just abandon the stereotypes that come with gender roles in gaming. Specifically, like I'm a big fan of, I've played League of Legends for about 10 years and I play World of Warcraft and things like that. And one very big stereotype is that women can only play support characters or healers. And it's odd because I do see that a majority of the girls that I play with either in my guild on WoW or that I meet in League of Legends online, they're typically in those roles. And I, you know, it's a question like, do they genuinely want to be in that role? Or is that kind of where like your gender is pushed into and you feel out of place not filling that role? You get me?
Yeah, but it just seems like genders have their own tastes. Like guys like shooter games or sports games, women like those puzzle games or match three or things like that. Mm-hmm. So isn't it just like a personality thing?
So it could, like, this is where like gender gets like very complicated because realistically for example, I don't like traditional sports, you know, and I identify as a straight cis male. And I just have never been interested in sports, literally ever. I would play them with friends. I would go to the park and play, but I don't follow any pro teams or anything at all. And once my parents stopped signing me up for sports, I stopped doing them, you know, but, you know, there's nothing innate about men that says, hey, men have to like sports. Right. And there's nothing innate about females that, yeah, you have to be super caring and, you know, supportive of people or, you know, whatever would align them to that specific role in those games.
Yeah, but there's the tendency, you could say.
Yeah, I guess there is a tendency, you could say, but that's also, I won't even say stereotyping, but more like kind of assuming, right? Because because gender roles are strictly constructed, right? Like what we perceive, like men to act a certain way, like men having to be a breadwinner is a very stereotypical way of viewing men as a gender. because, you know, I would actually be okay if I had a significant other and she made an amazing amount of money and we had a kid and she was like, you know, I would feel very comfortable with you leaving your job and taking care of our children. I would be like, honestly, that's fine. I'd be okay with that. But I know I have friends whose families did not grow up that way. And it would basically demasculinate my friend, for example. So that's kind of the problem with like gender and how we perceive it to be.
Yeah, I see that as flawed and a kind of old school way of looking at it is like a bad way. And I feel like that's dying off where people like, if women make the same as men, actually there's the fight for that with the gap. So I don't, I see it more as, for example, differences in Stanford. They found women are better at writing ability, reading comprehension, fine motor skills, and perpetual speed, while men are better at juggling multiple items from memory, physio-spatial skills, which is basically visualizing 2D and 3D objects, and determining angles, tracking movement, stuff like that. So while it's good that that seeming old school way is dying off where women can now make the same as men, there's still these differences among the genders.
Yeah, so I would say that there's differences among the sexes, right? Like sex is something that is biological. Gender is something that we socially construct. So I do think that I need to probably do more personal research on the biological factors, but there are definitely differences, right? Like we have two completely different structures. One is estrogen and one is testosterone, right? And these different hormones elicit different responses and they behave differently in our bodies. So there's definitely some differences. But when it comes to gender and structuring how we expect a male gendered male sexed person to behave is kind of, it's just kind of wrong. I mean, there have been times where, you know, I've totally been like either like misstereotyped or, you know, I'm sure all of us have, right? Where you're not the, I don't want to say the spitting image of a, you know, quote unquote man, right? Like, but there's things that typical men like to do that I definitely don't. I mean, would you say the same?
Yeah, everyone's unique.
Yeah. So I don't think that devalues you any less of a man, right? Like if you would identify as a man, right? And let's say you just don't like sports. Does that take away from your manliness or your manhood?
No, I don't think anyone's arguing that. I think it's more just there's the tendency that men do like sports or women, maybe not cooking. No, I don't think so. That's true. But there's tendencies like that is what I guess I'm trying to say. I can't think of a good example.
Yeah. And I would say, for example, like when you said cooking, and it's funny because I guess the reason why there is a tendency that females are associated with cooking is because just traditionally and historically for probably as long as humanity's been around, at least in civilized society, women have been the stay-at-home moms that had to cook and provide for the family. So that's where the idea of cooking got attached to femininity. So you get me? That's why there's some aspects of gender that are just completely socially constructed just because of historical kind of what we've gone through and how we've seen things previously. Cause I mean, I just cooked dinner today for everybody. So, you know, I don't like cooking just cause I think I'm kind of bad at it and I don't have the time to like really invest and learn, but I think it's interesting. I think people that are professional cooks, I think that's awesome. Like man or woman, like whoever does it, you know, but it should be, there's a lot of things that are gender neutral or gender fluid that should just exist as what they are. And they shouldn't be gendered. Cooking shouldn't be a gendered activity. Fishing shouldn't be seen as a gendered activity. So same thing with gaming, right? Gaming shouldn't be seen as a gendered activity. So if there's a girl that wants to play a shooter, fuck it, let her, right?
Yeah, and 100, nobody's arguing with that. But
no, I'm not saying anyone's arguing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying. I'm just kind of saying just because, I mean, you're a gamer, right?
I used to be kinda a big one as a kid. I haven't played in a bit, but yeah, I used to be a big one.
Yeah, the reason I kind of get passionate or into things, it's just because as a gamer myself growing up, like playing games my entire life, I not only participated in this toxic culture that exists now, but now that I've kind of like woken up from that like spell and realized like what's going on around me and how we treat people and perceive people, I see it all the time, just like the way people, and I have all sisters. I have four sisters and they all play video games because of me. And I grew up teaching them and playing and it was always great. And it was just weird. Once things got online, I noticed that like, when I was younger, like 16, 17, 18, just like I would just say terrible things to girls. Like, oh, you can't play this game. You're shit. You're bad. You can only go support or, you know, whatever. You can't play this game.
You ever,
and after a while, what's up?
You ever play in one of those Call of Duty lobbies back in like 2010 or something like that?
Yeah, girl. And oh, there's some where they
just... Well, I just mean everyone in general. Like, they would just, no matter what you were or anything, they would just swear at you.
Oh, I mean, yeah, definitely. But I mean, if you spoke as, like, if you were in a COD lobby and you were playing and all of a sudden you heard a girl say, oh, on your left, or something, like a call out, immediately she was targeted. They don't even know what she looks like or anything, but on the, oh, you sound hot. Can you add me after this? Can we play? Can we play together? Like, that's just from experience for me, like hearing that being said in lobbies or watching videos of it and just having friends that are girls that play games that I play games with and them constantly being either hit on or harassed.
Yeah, that pressure.
It exists. And that's kind of like what I wanted to address with my thesis is trace the history of how we've gotten to this point and how it's become like almost an acceptable thing because I don't see anyone doing anything to address this issue. And I've actually posted on Reddit before just to like look for research and talk to people and get information and statistics. And people told me, oh, if you think gaming culture is toxic, you're just a fucking idiot. You're wasting your master's degree on studying something stupid and pointless. And it was actually really worrisome that there's actually people that think that.
Yeah. Building off of that, what you said with the COD lobby, 2015 study found that bad male players were hostile towards female voices and submissive to male voices, but higher skilled males were more positive to females.
That's actually interesting.
Yeah, I found that study fun. Okay, moving back. You mentioned something about culture of Atari prior. Is there anything you want to add on to that?
Yeah, so one big thing I think that personally helped to helped like negatively to shape the technological industry for women was the culture that happened at Atari. It's no mystery at this point that Nolan Bushnell is very very overt about kind of like what was going on there, and he didn't pull any punches telling the history. And it's kind of shocking to kind of learn about what was going on there and how they developed their own kind of, well, what is it, like that startup Silicon Valley culture that existed. A gentleman named Stephen Kent, he wrote The Ultimate History of Video Games, and it is extremely lengthy, but it is also an extremely valuable resource if you're looking to learn about the history of video games, arcades, everything like that. And he does a good job of detailing all of this in his book because he gets firsthand accounts from interviews with all of the innovators of the field. And a lot of what Nolan was saying, there's stories of naming secret projects after some of the sexiest female employees of the company. He would hire beautiful secretaries specifically to be personal workers to the best engineers at the company to kind of encourage them to do better work. They were he basically treated the entire facility as if it was a frat house. And there was like beer Fridays, girls walking around in like super casual clothes. He would he actually hosted board meetings in a hot tub, and he would invite his secretaries to come in and have nude parties and things like that. And he says like, oh, you know, it was a different culture. It was the 70s. It was a startup culture. We were being chill. And, you know, I guess that like to an extent, like I understand that sentiment where it's coming from. But this sexualization of women has constantly just been something that we've done throughout history. And this was one of the biggest problems is because there was only maybe, I think anywhere between two or three lead engineers at Atari. And you don't even know their names. You don't hear the story. You don't hear what they helped develop. You don't hear anything from it. And a lot of women, Kotaku did actually an amazing article on, they talked to 12 women employees from Atari. And a lot of them were said that, yeah, there was a lot of promiscuous stuff. There was a lot of like unwelcomed gestures towards them, and they kind of dismissed it at the time because I mean, what do? You just go to your boss and say, hey, you know, sexual harassment kind of thing. Nowadays, like with the whole, yeah, we have to have a whole Me Too movement because people just won't come out about sexual harassment in the workplace or personal lives and rape and all these things. So just this history of sexualization in the workplace of the video game giants of the world, the people who basically started it all, that culture spread, whether it was into the consumer market or into the gaming culture itself of the players and even other startups. Because they all look to Atari as this giant, like, oh, you made so much money, how can we emulate your success? And that's kind of where it started to trickle down into gaming.
Kind of make me picture Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, what about Cold War? You mentioned you know something about that, or that factored in.
Yeah, so one thing that I decided to do is, in my first chapter, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the 70s and the 60s and 70s in general, and just talk about how the ideas of how society was thought to be constructed played a part in kind of creating this atmosphere at Atari and targeting some of the marketing strategies for the first games and consoles. And one thing was with the Cold War, right? One big thing that was the biggest scare in America was the communist threat. And one way that American politicians decided to kind of constructed a defense system against communism was reinforcing the nuclear family. So that meant, you know, having your father at the spearhead, producing the income for the family, the stay-at-home mom who's involved in this in the neighborhood, taking care of, you know, the kids, the home, their neighbors. And the kid, you know, the kids, they're going to school, they're playing outside, they're playing sports, and they're doing American things. So by targeting the American family, you are kind of also like fighting against this idea of radical communism and things like that. So there was a lot of social factors that just went into the 60s and 70s, including the civil rights movement and second wave feminism. That was kind of just shaking up the way that people thought things to be. So especially with also, I wanted to add, like with the 70s and 80s, LGBTQ rights. So that was another thing that kind of shook up the nuclear family, because politicians were like Pat Buchanan. He was overtly against homosexuals and women's and even women's rights. He was just like, they had their own place in society and that was it. So once you start shaking up the core value of American society, the nuclear family, then things kind of get a little bit out of control. So all of these social things were going on while gaming was being developed, programmed, innovated, created, and distributed into society so there could be a culture to kind of create itself around this new video game sensation. So that's what I wanted to kind of say about just the attitudes of the Cold War and the 70s pretty much.
Got it. What was the generation that began this disruption?
So I would probably say like it would be the like the 60s culture heading into the 70s. So whatever was going on in the 60s heavily impacted what would be going on in the 70s with Atari's success, because they just, once they launched Computer Space, that was pretty much it. And then eventually Pong and just millions and millions and millions of dollars from that point. But the 60s were a time of, especially civil rights as well. So and one big story also, one of the shortcomings of my thesis, for example, is talking about race in gaming. So I talked a lot about gender clearly, but race, if I added that to my paper, it would just become too broad of a topic and I would never be able to finish in time. But that is something I would like to add in the foreseeable future, hopefully after I graduate, that there is a lot of racial tensions that go into the gaming field as well, because African Americans were nowhere near as represented in games or the industry as a whole, especially during, not until probably, I don't have any statistic for this, unfortunately, but I wouldn't say until at least after the 2000s. The only example that I do have was the guy who invented the Channel F, which was the first cartridge-based console, as well as, I can't remember his name right now, but he made the second Madden. After the first Madden came out, the second Madden, he basically, in the game, the characters could only be the same skin color because of the graphics were so bad at the time. So he actually got it so that the second Madden, all the characters were black. So there was finally some representation for African Americans in video games at the time. But that's probably like one of the only examples, unfortunately.
Got it. What is the Summer of Love? And you said you want to bring that up too.
Oh, the Summer of Love is kind of what Bushnell uses as his excuse as to why Atari was like peace, love, and rock and roll all the time. And like I said before, I definitely understand the sentiment as to it was a cultural revolution. It was during the time of Vietnam, and people were really upset. A lot of loved ones were not only getting drafted and forced into a really phony war, but they were coming back really sick, you know, a lot of mental issues and problems and war wounds. And even to this day, we have Vietnam veterans that are homeless, injured, without care or anything. So the Summer of Love was the 70s idea, basically hippie culture, hippie movement of, people were doing drugs. And there's actually one Atari employee who says that if you walked through certain rooms in the facility, you would instantly get high because of how much weed people were smoking at the job. And it wasn't just that. People were finding programmers were finding heroin needles in the production lobby bathrooms, because what Nolan did was he went down to the local unemployment office once Atari started getting ridiculously popular and selling a lot of consoles, and they hired everyone there. And they were all like bikers, and that's how they described it, bikers, hippies, and anyone like that. And they were just doing drugs, and they were just drinking, and it was a really toxic environment to work.
It's basically like concert? Not
Woodstock.
Woodstock. Yeah, it's basically like Woodstock, yeah. But carrying over.
That's pretty much what it was. And you know, we live in a very socially charged environment right now. Like, we're seeing racial change. We are seeing we're fighting for gender rights and all these things. And so just imagine what's going on today. But in the 60s and 70s, but while video games weren't, they didn't exist, actually. So imagine video games were being born during this time of turmoil, this social turmoil that's happening everywhere. Kind of puts things in perspective, at least.
Yeah, I get that. Sounds interesting. I think I'm out of questions. Is there anything you want to bring up?
No, I think we definitely talked about a lot. Like, we could literally sit here for days and just talk about it. It's a thesis. I'm glad. I'm actually thankful that you were able to push me. I haven't really been. No one really likes to challenge people on what they have to say or their research. So it's really cool what you do here, and it was nice to give me an opportunity to kind of like defend my thoughts and my assertions and my arguments. So I definitely appreciate that.
Sounds good. Thanks for coming out. Is there any final message?
I would definitely. I just want to say, Black Lives Matter, LGBTQ Lives Matter, and I know with COVID going on, everybody, just make sure you're staying safe. Make sure you are checking in on your loved ones, your friends. Work on your make sure your mental health is all good. We're gonna get through everything. Thank you for having me, Bill. This is a phenomenal podcast. I'm thankful for the opportunity, and I just hope everybody has learned a little bit of something from me and got a little bit more informed on gaming.
All right. Well, thanks for coming out. For everybody, this is The Way Podcast, found at podcasttheway.com. And as always, deuces.